Harry grabbed Simon by the back of his coat and hauled him into a cosmetic store. It was massive on the inside, with rows of gleaming bottles everywhere. "And something unusual," she said, heading for the fragrance area. "Isabel isn't going to want to smell like everyone else. She's going to want to smell like figs or vetiver or... figs? Figs have a smell?" Simon looked horrified. Clary was about to laugh at him when her phone buzzed. It was her mother. "Where are you?" Clary rolled her eyes and texted back. Jocelyn still got nervous when she thought Clary was out with Jace. Even though, as Clary had pointed out, Jace was probably the safest boyfriend in the world since he was pretty much banned from 1. Getting angry, 2. Making sexual advances, and 3. Doing anything that would produce an adrenaline rush. On the other hand, he had been possessed. She and her mother had both watched while he stood by and let Sebastian threaten Luke. Clary still hadn't talked about everything she'd seen in the apartment she'd shared with Jason Sebastian for that brief time out of time, a mixture of dream and nightmare. She'd never told her mother that Jace had killed someone. There were things Jocelyn didn't need to know, things Clary didn't want to face herself. "There is so much in this store I can picture Magnus wanting," Simon said, picking up a glass bottle of body glitter suspended in some kind of oil. "Is it against some kind of rule to buy presents for someone who broke up with your friend?"
"I guess it depends. Is Magnus your closer friend or Alec?"
"Alec remembers my name," said Simon, and he set the bottle back down. "And I feel bad for him. I understand why Magnus did it, but Alec is so wrecked. I feel like if someone loves you, they should forgive you if you're really sorry."
"I think it depends what you did," Clary said.
"I don't mean Alec, I just mean in general. I'm sure Isabel would forgive you for anything," she added hastily. Simon looked dubious. "Hold still," she announced, wielding a bottle near his head. "In 3 minutes, I'm going to smell your neck."
"Well, I never," said Simon. "You've waited a long time to make your move, Frey, I'll say that for you."
Clary didn't bother with a smart retort. She was still thinking of what Simon had said about forgiveness and remembering someone else, someone else's voice and face and eyes. Sebastian sitting across from her at a table in Paris.
"Do you think you can forgive me?
I mean, do you think forgiveness is possible for someone like me?"
"There are things you can never forgive," she said.
"I can never forgive Sebastian."
"You don't love him."
"No, but he's my brother. If things were different..."
"But they're not different."
Clary abandoned the thought and leaned in to inhale instead. "You smell like figs and apricots."
"Do you really think Isabel wants to smell like a dried fruit plate?"
"Maybe not." Clary picked up another bottle.
"So what are you going to do?"
"When?" Clary looked up from pondering the question of how a tube rose was different from a regular rose to see Simon looking at her with puzzlement in his brown eyes. She said,
"Well, you can't live with Jordan forever, right? There's college."
"You're not going to college," he said.
"No, but I'm a shadow hunter. We keep studying after 18. We get posted to other institutes. That's our college."
"I don't like the thought of you going away." He shoved his hands into the pockets of his coat. "I can't go to college," he said. "My mother's not exactly going to pay for it, and I can't take out student loans. I'm legally dead, and besides, how long would it take everyone at school to notice they were getting older, but I wasn't? 16-year-olds don't look like college seniors, I don't know if you've noticed."
Clary set the bottle down.
"Simon, maybe I should get my mom something," he said bitterly.
"What says thanks for throwing me out of the house and pretending I died?
Orchids?" But Simon's joking mood had gone.
"Maybe it's not like old times," he said.
"I would have gotten you pencils, usually. Art supplies, but you don't draw anymore, do you? Except with your steely. You don't draw, and I don't breathe.
Not so much like last year."
"Maybe you should talk to Raphael," Clary said.
"Raphael?"
"He knows how vampires live," Clary said. "How they make lives for themselves and how they make money, how they get apartments. He does know those things. He could help."
"He could, but he wouldn't," said Simon with a frown.
"I haven't heard anything from the Dumour bunch since Maureen took over from Camille. I know Raphael is her second in command.
I'm pretty sure they still think I have the mark of Cain, otherwise they would have sent someone after me by now. Matter of time. No, they know not to touch you. It would be war with the Clave. The Institute's been very clear, said Clary. You're protected.
Clary, Simon said, none of us are protected.
Before Clary could answer, she heard someone call out her name. Thoroughly puzzled, she looked over and saw her mother shoving her way through a crowd of shoppers. Through the window, she could see Luke waiting outside on the sidewalk. In his flannel shirt, he looked out of place among the stylish New Yorkers. Breaking free of the crowd, Jocelyn caught up to them and threw her arms around Clary. Clary looked over her mother's shoulder, baffled at Simon. He shrugged. Finally, Jocelyn released her and stepped back. I was so worried something had happened to you.
In Sephora? Clary said.
Jocelyn's brow furrowed.
You haven't heard?
I would have thought Jace would have texted you by now. Clary felt a sudden cold wash through her veins, as if she'd swallowed icy water.
No, what's going on?
I'm sorry, Simon, Jocelyn said, but Clary and I have to get to the Institute right away.
Not much had changed at Magnus's since the first time Jace had been there. The same small entryway and single yellow bulb. Jace used an open rune to get in through the front door, took the stairs two at a time, and buzzed Magnus's apartment bell. Safer than using another rune, he figured. After all, Magnus could be playing video games naked or really doing practically anything. Who knew what warlocks got up to in their spare time? Jace buzzed again, this time leaning firmly on the doorbell. Two more long buzzes, and Magnus finally yanked the door open, looking furious. He was wearing a black silk dressing gown over a white dress shirt and tweed pants. His feet were bare, his dark hair was tangled, and there was the shadow of stubble on his jaw. What are you doing here? He demanded. My, said Jace. So unwelcoming. That's because you're not welcome. Jace raised an eyebrow. I thought we were friends. No, you are Alec's friend. Alec was my boyfriend, so I had to put up with you. But now he's not my boyfriend, so I don't have to put up with you. Not that any of you seem to realize it. You must be the, fourth of you lot to bother me? Magnus counted off on his long fingers. Clary, Isabel, Simon. Simon came by. He seemed surprised. I didn't think he was that invested in your relationship with Alec. I don't have a relationship with Alec, said Magnus flatly. But Jace had already shouldered past him and was in his living room, looking around curiously. One of the things Jace had always secretly liked about Magnus's apartment was that it rarely looked the same way twice. Sometimes it was a big modern loft, sometimes it looked like a French bordello, or a Victorian opium den, or the inside of a spaceship. Right now, though, it was messy and dark. Stacks of old Chinese food cartons littered the coffee table. Chairman Miao lay on the rag rug, all four legs sticking straight out in front of him like a dead deer. It smells like heartbreak in here, said Jace. That's the Chinese food. Magnus threw himself onto the sofa and stretched out his long legs. Go on, get it over with. Say whatever you came here to say. I think you should get back together with Alec, said Jace. Magnus rolled his eyes up to the ceiling. And why is that? Because he's miserable, said Jace. And he's sorry. He's sorry about what he did. He won't do it again. Oh, he won't sneak around behind my back with one of my exes planning to shorten my life again? Very noble of him. Magnus. Besides, Camille's dead. He can't do it again. You know what I mean, said Jace. He won't lie to you, or mislead you, or hide things from you, or whatever it is you're actually upset about. He threw himself into a wing-back leather chair and raised an eyebrow. So? Magnus rolled onto his side. What do you care if Alec's miserable? What do I care? Jace said, so loudly that Chairman Miao sat bolt upright as if he'd been shocked. Of course I care about Alec. He's my best friend, my parabatai. And he's unhappy. And so are you by the look of things. Take out containers everywhere. You haven't done anything to fix up the place. Your cat looks dead. He's not dead. I care about Alec, Jace said. fixing Magnus with an unswerving gaze. I care about him more than I care about myself. Don't you ever think, Magnus mused, pulling at a bit of peeling fingernail polish, that the whole Parabatai business is rather cruel? You can choose your Parabatai, but then you can never unchoose them, even if they turn on you. Look at Luke and Valentine. And though your Parabatai is the closest person in the world to you in some ways, you can't fall in love with them? And if they die, some part of you dies too. How do you know so much about Parabatai? I know shadow hunters, said Magnus, patting the sofa behind him so that the chairman leaped up onto the cushions and nudged at Magnus with his head. The warlock's long fingers sank into the cat's fur. I have for a long time. You are odd creatures, all fragile nobility and humanity on one side, and all the thoughtless fire of angels on the other. His eyes flicked toward Jace. You especially, Herondale, for you have the fire of angels in your blood. You've been friends with shadow hunters before? Friends, said Magnus. What does that mean, really? You'd know, said Jace. If you had any. Do you? Do you have friends? I mean, besides the people who come to your parties. Most people are afraid of you, or they seem to owe you something, or you slept with them once. But friends, I don't see you having a lot of those. Well, this is novel, said Magnus. None of the rest of your group has tried insulting me. Is it working? If you mean do I suddenly feel compelled to get back together with Alec, no, said Magnus. I have developed an odd craving for pizza, but that might be unrelated. Alec said you do that, said Jace. Deflect questions about yourself with jokes. Magnus narrowed his eyes. And I'm the only one who does that? Exactly, Jace said. Take it from someone who knows. You hate talking about yourself, and you'd rather make people angry than be pitied. How old are you, Magnus? The real answer. Magnus said nothing. What were your parents' names? Your father's name? Magnus glared at him out of gold-green eyes. If I wanted to lie on a couch and complain to someone about my parents, I'd hire a psychiatrist. Ah, said Jace, but my services are free. I heard that about you. Jace grinned and slid down in his chair. There was a pillow with a pattern of the Union Jack on the ottoman. He grabbed it and put it behind his head. I don't have anywhere to be. I can sit here all day. Great, Magnus said. I'm going to take a nap. He reached out for a crumpled blanket lying on the floor, just as Jace's phone rang. Magnus watched, arrested mid-motion, as Jace dug around in his pocket and flipped the phone open. It was Isabel. Jace? Yeah, I'm at Magnus's place. I think I might be making some headway. What's up? Come back, Isabel said, and Jace sat up straight, the pillow tumbling to the floor. Her voice was tightly strained. He could hear the sharpness in it, like the off notes of a badly tuned piano. To the Institute, right away, Jace. What is it? He asked. What's happened? And he saw Magnus sit up too, the blanket dropping from his hand. Sebastian, Isabel said. Jace closed his eyes. He saw golden blood and white feathers scattered across a marble floor. He remembered the apartment, a knife in his hands, the world at his feet, Sebastian's grip on his wrist, those fathomless black eyes looking at him with dark amusement. There was a buzzing in his ears. What is it? Magnus's voice cut through Jace's thoughts. He realized he was already at the door, the phone back in his pocket. He turned. Magnus was behind him, his expression stark. Is it Alec? Is he all right? What do you care? Said Jace, and Magnus flinched. Jace didn't think he'd ever seen Magnus flinch before. It was the only thing that kept Jace from slamming the door on the way out. There were dozens of unfamiliar coats and jackets hanging in the entryway of the Institute. Clary felt the tight buzzing of tension in her shoulders as she unzipped her own wool coat and hung it on one of the hooks that lined the walls. And Maris didn't say what this was about? Clary demanded. The edges of her voice had been rubbed thin by anxiety. Jocelyn had unwound a long gray scarf from around her neck and barely looked as Luke took it from her to drape it on a hook. Her green eyes were darting around the room, taking in the gate of the elevator, the arched ceiling overhead, the faded murals of men and angels. Luke shook his head. Just that there'd been an attack on the Clave, and we needed to get here as quickly as possible. It's the wee pot that concerns me. Jocelyn wound her hair up into a knot at the back of her head, and secured it with her fingers. I haven't been in an institute in years. Why do they want me here? Luke squeezed her shoulder reassuringly. Clary knew what Jocelyn feared, what they all feared. The only reason the Clave would want Jocelyn here was if there was news of her son. Maris said they'd be in the library, Jocelyn said. Clary led the way. She could hear Luke and her mother talking behind her, and the soft sound of their footsteps, Luke slower than they had once been. He hadn't entirely recovered from the injury that had nearly killed him in November. You know why you're here, don't you? Breathed the soft voice in the back of her head. She knew it wasn't really there, but that didn't help. She hadn't seen her brother since the fight at the Burren, but she carried him in some small part of her mind, an intrusive, unwelcome ghost. Because of me, you always knew I hadn't gone away forever. I told you what would happen. I spelled it out for you. Erhome. I am coming. They had reached the library, the door was half open, and a babble of voices spilled through. Jocelyn paused for a moment, her expression tight. Clary put her hand on the doorknob. Are you ready? She hadn't noticed till then what her mother was wearing. Black jeans, boots, and a black turtleneck. As if without thinking about it, she had put on the closest thing she had to fighting gear. Jocelyn nodded at her daughter. Someone had pushed back all the furniture in the library, clearing a large space in the middle of the room, just atop the mosaic of the angel. A massive table had been placed there, a huge slab of marble balanced on top of two kneeling stone angels. Around the table were seated the conclave. Some members, like Kadir and Maris, Clary knew by name. Others were just familiar faces. Maris was standing, ticking off names on her fingers as she chanted aloud. Berlin, she said. No survivors. Bangkok. No survivors. Moscow. No survivors. Los Angeles. Los Angeles, said Jocelyn. That was the Blackthorns, are they? Maris looked startled, as if she hadn't realized Jocelyn had come in. Her blue eyes swept over Luke and Clary. She looked drawn and exhausted. Her hair scraped back severely, a stain, red wine or blood, on the sleeve of her tailored jacket. There were survivors, she said. Children, they're in Idris now. Helen, said Alec, and Clary thought of the girl who had fought with them against Sebastian at the Burren. She remembered her in the nave of the Institute, a dark-haired boy clinging to her wrist. My brother Julian. Aline's girlfriend. Clary blurted out, and saw the conclave look at her with thinly veiled hostility. They always did, as if who she was and what she represented made them almost unable to see her. Valentine's daughter. Valentine's daughter. Is she all right? She was in Idris with Aline, said Maris. Her younger brothers and sisters survived, although there seems to have been an issue with the eldest brother, Mark. An issue, said Luke. What's going on exactly, Maris? I don't think we'll know the whole story until we get to Idris, said Maris, smoothing back her already smooth hair. But there have been attacks, several in the course of 2 nights, on 6 institutes. We're not sure yet how the institutes were breached, but we know. Sebastian, said Clary's mother. She had her hands jammed into the pockets of her black trousers, but Clary suspected that if she hadn't, Clary would have been able to see that her mother's hands were tightened into fists. Cut to the point, Maris, my son. You wouldn't have called me here if he wasn't responsible, would you? Jocelyn's eyes met Maris's, and Clary wondered if this was how it had been when they'd both been in the circle, the sharp edges of their personalities rubbing up against each other, causing sparks. Before Maris could speak, the door opened and Jace came in. He was flushed with the cold, bareheaded, fair hair tousled by the wind. His hands were gloveless, red at the tips from the weather, scarred with marks new and old. He saw Clary and gave her a quick smile before settling into a chair propped against the wall. Luke, as usual, moved to make peace. "Maris, is Sebastian responsible?" Maris took a deep breath. "Yes, yes he was, and he had the Indocent with him." "Of course it's Sebastian," said Isabel. She had been staring down at the table. Now she raised her head. Her face was a mask of hatred and rage. "He said he was coming. Well, now he's come." Maris sighed. "We assumed he'd attack Idris. That was what all the intelligence indicated, not institutes." "So he did the thing you didn't expect," said Jace. "He always does the thing you don't expect. Maybe the Clave should plan for that." Jace's voice dropped. I told you he'd want more soldiers. "Jace," said Maris, "you're not helping."
"I wasn't trying to."
"I would have thought he'd attack here first," said Alec, "given what Jace was saying before, and it's true. Everyone he loves or hates is here."
"He doesn't love anyone," Jocelyn snapped.
"Mom, stop," Clary said. Her heart was pounding, sick in her chest. Yet at the same time, there was a strange sense of relief. All this time waiting for Sebastian to come, and now he had. Now the waiting was over. Now the war would start.
"So what are we supposed to do? Fortify the Institute? Hide?"
"Let me guess," said Jace, his voice dripping sarcasm. "The Clave's called for a council, another meeting."
"The Clave has called for immediate evacuation," said Maris. And at that, everyone went silent, even Jace. "All institutes are to empty out. All conclaves must return to Alicante. The wards around Idris will be doubled after tomorrow. No one will be able to come in or get out."
Isabel swallowed. "When do we leave New York?" Maris straightened up. Some of her usual imperious air was back. Her mouth a thin line, her jaw set with determination.
"Go and pack," she said. "We leave tonight."
2. Stand or fall. Waking was like being plunged into a bath of icy water. Emma sat up straight, torn out of her sleep, her mouth opening on a scream. "Jules! Jules!" There was movement in the darkness, a hand on her arm, and a sudden light that stung her eyes. Emma gasped and scrabbled backward, pushing herself among the cushions. She was lying on a bed, she realized, pillows stacked behind her back and the sheets twisted around her body in a sweaty tangle. She blinked the darkness out of her eyes, trying to focus. Helen Blackthorne was leaning over her, blue-green eyes worried, a witch-light glowing in her hand. They were in a room with a steeply gabled roof, slanting down hard on either side, like in a fairy tale cabin. A big four-poster wooden bed was in the center of the room, and in the shadows behind Helen, Emma could see furniture looming. A big square wardrobe, a long sofa, a table with rickety legs. "Where am I?" Emma gasped. "Idris," Helen said, stroking her arm in a soothing manner. "You made it to Idris, Emma. We're in the attic of the Penhallows' house." My parents..." Emma's teeth chattered. "Where are my parents?" "You came through the portal with Julian," said Helen gently, not answering her question. "All of you made it through somehow. It's a miracle, you know. The Clave opened the way, but portal travel is hard. Drew came through holding on to Tavi, and the twins came through together, of course. And then, when we'd almost given up hope, you two. You were unconscious, Em." She brushed Emma's hair back from her forehead. "We were so worried. You should have seen Jules." "What's happening?" Emma demanded. She pulled back from Helen's touch, not because she didn't like Helen, but because her heart was pounding. "What about Mark and Mr. Blackthorne?" Helen hesitated. "Sebastian Morgenstern has attacked 6 institutes over the past few days. He's either killed everyone or turned them. He can use the Infernal Cup to make Shadow Hunters not themselves anymore." "I saw him do it," Emma whispered.
To Katerina, and he turned your father, too. They were going to do it to Mark, but Sebastian said he didn't want him because he had fairy blood. Helen flinched. We have reason to think Mark's still alive, she said. They were able to track him to a point where he disappeared, but the runes indicate he's not dead. It's possible that Sebastian may be holding him hostage. My parents, Emma said again, through a drier throat this time. She knew what it meant that Helen hadn't answered her question the first time she'd asked it. Where are they? They weren't in the Institute, so Sebastian couldn't have hurt them. Helen exhaled. She looked young suddenly, almost as young as Jules. Sebastian doesn't just attack Institutes. He murders or takes Conclave members from their own homes. Your parents, the Clave tried to track them, but they couldn't. Then their bodies washed up in Marina Del Rey on the beach this morning. The Clave doesn't know what happened exactly, but... Helen's voice trailed off into a meaningless string of words. Words such as positive identification and scars and markings on the bodies and no evidence recovered. Things like in the water for hours and no way to transport the corpses. And given all the proper funeral rites burned on the beach as they had both requested, you understand. Emma screamed. It was a scream with no words at first, rising higher and higher, a scream that tore her throat and brought the taste of metal into her mouth. It was a scream of loss so immense there was no speech for it. It was the wordless cry of having the sky over your head, the air in your lungs ripped away from you forever. She screamed and screamed again and tore at the mattress with her hands until she gouged through it. And there were feathers and blood stuck under her fingernails, and Helen was sobbing, trying to hold her, saying, Emma, Emma, please, Emma, please. And then there was more illumination. Someone had turned on a lantern in the room, and Emma heard her name, in a soft, urgent, familiar voice, and Helen let her go, and there was Jules, leaning against the edge of the bed and holding something out to her, something that gleamed gold in the new harsh light. It was Cortana, unsheathed, lying bare across his palms like an offering. Emma thought she was still screaming, but she took the sword, the words flashing across the blade, burning across her eyes. I am Cortana, of the same steel and temper as Joyeuse and Durandal. She heard her father's voice in her head. Carstairs have carried this sword for generations. The inscription reminds us that shadow hunters are the angels' weapons. Temper us in the fire and we grow stronger. When we suffer, we survive. Emma choked, pushing back on the screams, forcing them down and into silence. This was what her father had meant. Like Cortana, she had steel in her veins and she was meant to be strong. Even if her parents were not there to see it, she would be strong for them. She hugged the sword against her chest. As if from a distance, she heard Helen exclaim and reach for her. But Julian, who always knew what Emma needed, tugged Helen's hand back. Emma's fingers were around the blade, and blood was running down her arms and chest where the tip sliced at her collarbone. She didn't feel it. Rocking back and forth, she clutched the sword like it was the only thing she had ever loved, and let the blood spill down instead of tears.
Simon couldn't quite shake a feeling of déjà vu. He'd been here before, standing just outside the Institute, watching the Lightwoods disappear through a shimmering portal. Though then, back before he had ever borne the mark of Cain, the portal had been created by Magnus, and this time it was under the oversight of a blue-skinned warlock woman named Katerina Loss. That time, he'd been summoned because Jace had wanted to talk to him about Clary before he disappeared into another country. This time, Clary was disappearing with them. He felt her hand on his, her fingers lightly wringing his wrist. The whole of the Conclave, nearly every shadow hunter in New York City, had come through the gates of the Institute and passed through the shimmering portal. The Lightwoods, as guardians of the Institute, would go last. Simon had been here since the start of twilight, bars of red sky sliding down behind the buildings of the New York skyline. And now which light lit the scene in front of him? picking out small glimmering details. Isabel's whip, the spark of fire that jumped from Alec's family ring as he gestured, the glints in Jace's pale hair.